ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, 6th chapter, text number 24, and we'll repeat text number 25. This 24 has no purport. Yuyam taranu modadvam yadichchanya sura yasura sura nasamrabhena siddhanti sabhata Santvayayata. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. My dear demigods, with patience and peace, everything can be done. But if one is agitated by anger, the goal is not achieved. Therefore, whatever the demigods ask, agree to their proposal. Six. Na bhetavyam kalakutan Vishaj jaladhi sambhavat Lubha karyo navo jatu Rosha kamastu vastushu Na Not. Bhetavyam. Should be afraid. Kalakutat. Of Kalakuta. Vishat. From the poison. Jaladhi. From the ocean of milk. Sambhavat. Which will appear. Lobha. Greed. Karya. Execution. Not. Ba, unto you. Jatu, at any time. Rosha, anger. Kama, lust. Tu, and. Vastushu, in the products. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. A poison known as Kalakuta, will be generated from the ocean of milk, but you should not fear it. And when various products are churned from the ocean, you should not be greedy for them or anxious to obtain them, nor should you be angry. Please repeat. A poison known as Kalakuta will be generated from the ocean of milk. But you should not fear it. And when various products are churned from the ocean, you should not be greedy for them or anxious to obtain them, nor should you be angry. Purport. It appears that by churning process, many things would be generated from the ocean of milk, including poison, valuable gems, nectar, and many beautiful women. The demigods were advised, however, not to be greedy for the gems or beautiful women, but to wait patiently for the nectar. The real purpose was to get the nectar. Om Gyan Dimanandasya Ganam Jana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yenatasmai Sri Guru Venimaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakata Mahyam Daratishva Parantikam. So in the first verse we read, which had no purport, actually, sometimes we speak on the Bhagavatam, we see that Srila Prabhupada didn't give a purport. And, you know, we're supposed to give some meaning to that. So one may think, who is this puffed up person who thinks they can give a purport, when Srila Prabhupada didn't. No. But we can understand that just like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said that I could say so much more about this, and even also Vrindavan Das Thakur. I could say so much more about this, but it would become unlimitedly voluminous because the Lord's pastimes are unlimited. So if I say everything about Lord Chaitanya, then the book will be so long that I'll never finish it, first of all, and second of all, no one will be able to read it. Just like nowadays, we rarely have time. Some devotees don't have time to read one verse. No, what to speak of, 25 volumes of Chaitanya Lila, or 100 volumes of Krishna Lila, or Chaitanya Lila. So Srila Prabhupada also, in that mood, had to finish the Bhagavatam, because Srila Prabhupada commented that when he met his Guru Maharaj in Radhakund, that previous to the meeting, he had gone there and stayed for a few months, and all the Babaji's came. They all came to hear from him, and so he gave for like almost 2 months just a purport on the verse of I Pumsa Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Doksaj, just one verse for 2 months. So that's how much nectar we can find in one verse. Of course, that's how much nectar Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur can find. That's how much is there. We may not be able to find that. We may not be able to find anything. So this is the nature of the Bhagavatam. And as Srila Prabhupada stated, the Srimad Bhagavatam in the heavenly planets is hundreds of times bigger, because they have more time to read it. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, millions of years to read the Bhagavatam. We have, little short 70, 80 years, maybe 90, maybe 60. And not only that, but then Prahlad Maharaj makes an analysis that how much time do we really have? We spend one third to one half of our time, depending on what mode one is situated in, sleeping. We spend, our childhood, there's no question of anything, just wasting time. And then when you become old and invalid, then you really can't, some people can't even read, especially in these Vedic times, previous to eyeglasses and everything. People just, at a certain point, they couldn't read anymore. Maybe someone would read to them. And also one is troubled by so many diseases and problems. And then most people have to work in that middle period, and then when you get to an adolescent, they're interested in sports and activities. And then in the middle, you have to work, 8 hours a day, nowadays 10, 12 hours a day. So how much time is there for self-realization? So therefore, we have to take great advantage of this time. So, in the first verse, there's just a couple of very important point that he makes, Bhagavatam makes, Shukadeva Goswami, that he says that yad ichchan yasura sura, that whatever they may desire, whatever these demons may desire, you should give it to them. Don't become angry. Meaning that what they will desire, we may not be able to give them. Now, we were discussing this yesterday, with some young devotees. And someone made the point that, because I was asking, what is their preaching strategy? What is the best preaching strategy? So one nice devotee made the point that we should actually try to preach in such a way that, not become angry or frustrated because people don't take up devotional service. People may not be interested in devotional service. Even though it's so logical, it makes so much sense to us. But we should be very patient, not become angry, frustrated, or just totally disappointed because people, but we should find what they're interested in and add some, you know, even if it's an indirect factor of Krishna consciousness. And then, and just like we have Kalachandras here, people don't come here to take prasada, most of them. Some people do, but most people don't. They come to eat. But we have Krishna conscious restaurants that make eating into a transcendental experience, and there's a Gyata Sukriti. Even though they don't understand the benefit, they are actually getting purified. So in everything we do, we might preach to on the platform of vegan or ecology. You know, just like yesterday we went and saw the, what was that? Something on the lake. Save the Lake or something like that. The lake, what's it like? White Rock Lake. So have some program. Now if a devotee would have been there, they could have mentioned, yes, you know, because the trees, and just relate it to the Supreme, to God, in a very indirect way. And then people come attracted to the devotee's ability to, and their understanding of things. Because generally people are superficial. So this is an instruction for us also. If you become agitated by anger, frustrated, you know, or in some way or another deviated from the real goal, then that goal is not achieved. So therefore one has to be very careful. Sarvartha, you know. Sarvartha means the desired or the final end. You know, we have to be very careful that we keep that final end in focus. And therefore we can tolerate so many things in order to achieve that final end. Just like Srila Prabhupada, by his own life, you know, he tolerated so many, he went through grihastha life. Srila Prabhupada didn't have to go through grihastha life. It was not a requirement for him to, for some purification. He simply did that. He spent 25 years, also Rupa and Sanatan, they didn't have to go through, you know, being Muslim magistrates or being working for the Muslim government. That wasn't a requirement for their advancement or purification. It was an example to show that whatever we may, because while they were doing that, you know, while Rupa and Sanatan were engaged in that service, what did they do? They created Gupta Vrindavan. You know, they, in the name of having a cultural center for the Hindus, you know, like where they've had dance and music and everything, they created a whole Gupta Vrindavan. It's a replica of Vrindavan right there in their estate, because they had a big estate. And so the Hindus would come, but then everything was Krishna Lila. Everything was based on Krishna. And so they were not only, you know, giving some relief to the Muslim tormented Hindus at that time, but they were giving them Krishna. So a devotee always finds within the context of a very difficult situation the way to give Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada, even though he was you know, in grihastha life and his family was not really oriented to preaching, he always found the opportunity to preach. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would sit on his veranda and out in front of his house, and people would come by and he would just call them over. Because he couldn't do, you know, the family was demanding so many things. He couldn't just go out and preach at that point in time. He would just, sir, invite them over and then just start preaching to them. So we always have to keep that final goal in mind, even though we may have to go, especially the devotees who are in the grihastha ashram. Sometimes it seems a little frustrating. I've been doing this for so many years and I have to work and I have to do this. Of course, some people don't find it frustrating. Some people find having to chant my rounds frustrating. But if someone is a serious devotee, they find that, you know, this can be a little frustrating. But it's supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be like that, because if grihastha life is just so pleasurable, I mean, the actual just being with the family, you know, then definitely one won't chant one's rounds, you know, because you'll be so absorbed, you know. So absorbed in the family situation. Just like someone mentioned to me yesterday, of course, a little jokingly, but it's a reality. I had a young child said, I'm more baby conscious than Krishna conscious. So this is the nature of grihastha life. But then all those things, that little cute little baby that makes cooing sounds like a dove or a baby deer, and then we'll start screaming, and then we'll start doing things, and then we'll disagree with you, and then we'll do what they want anyway, even though I had a certain plan, I had an idea what they should do, and they do something else, whether it's within or without Krishna consciousness, or whether whatever it is, then that will make us detached. So this is Krishna's mercy. Everything, you know, the only thing we have to do is keep ourselves focused on Krishna consciousness by Shravanam and Kirtanam. And then everything else will, Krishna will arrange so that we can come back to his lotus feet. That's why in the Bhagavatam, the demigods pray that they say that Krishna wants to satisfy everyone's desire, because Krishna is the original servant. Even though he's the Supreme Lord, he's Ishvara Paramakrishna, but he is everyone's servant. And he wants to satisfy his devotees' desires, even the neophyte devotees. But when he sees that that desire will lead to another desire, he takes it away, or he just doesn't satisfy it. He gives them devotional service, even though they don't want it. No, he gives it to them. So this is Krishna's mercy. But sometimes when he tries to give it to us, we insist, no, I want Maya. Just like one time Srila Prabhupada was speaking about some captain and his wife. And then one devotee said, but Srila Prabhupada, what does this have to do with Krishna? It has nothing to do with Krishna. This is Maya. By the way, he was just telling some story. And it really had nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. He told this story, the 2-minute story. So the devotees were trying to figure out, why did Prabhupada tell this story? It had nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. And of course, my realization of that was to show the devotees that one has to be able to distinguish between Maya and Krishna. Otherwise, the devotee actually asked Srila Prabhupada, what does this have to do? And Prabhupada was pleased that the devotee asked that, because it was Maya. I mean, it wasn't that Prabhupada was in Maya, but he was telling some story that had nothing to do with Krishna. Or we had no real lesson. There was no real lesson in it at all. But the lesson was that if you don't be careful, Maya can creep in, and we should be able to identify it. So this is also another point here, which is in the verse that we're taking more into consideration. No. The first thing he says, Nabhetabhyam kalakutad visha. Vishat. There is a special poison. No? Kalakuta. What is this special poison? This is the poison that Putana used to try to poison Krishna. No? So this particular poison is the most potent poison there is. You know, beyond arsenic, beyond anything we can conceive of. No. This kalakuta, it's like infallible poison. Of course, it wasn't infallible with Krishna. Nor, at the same poison, this kalakuta poison was given to Prahlad Maharaj by his mother, because she forced, Hiranyakashipu forced his wife to poison Prahlad, because he said, either you poison him with the cake, or I'll cut off his head in front of you. So, of course, she thought, well, I don't want to see my son, dangling in the air and then cut off his head, so I'd rather see him. If he has to die, I'd rather see him die from a poison cake. So this is like material life. These are the kind of offers you get. No? Would you like to die this way, or would you like to die that way? No? How would you like to die? So she gave him kalakuta, and Hiranyakashipu was sitting there waiting for him to keel over, and he just kept chanting. He couldn't believe it. So this is doesn't work on topmost pure devotees, and it doesn't work on Krishna, obviously, but it works on would probably work on us, so we shouldn't experiment with it. But still, he says here that we shouldn't be afraid. So what does that mean? I shouldn't be afraid of this poison. The demigod should not be afraid of this poison. What that means is, what is the poison? We discussed this the other day. Radha Krishna na bhajiya. No, not worshipping Radha and Krishna. But a devotee is not afraid of material existence. Just like Prahlad Maharaj. First, Prahlad Maharaj said that I'm very fearful of this material existence. And then later on he said, because I am magha chitta, no, that I am, my consciousness is absorbed in your sweet, wonderful pastimes. I have no fear of material existence. So one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, this is a little contradictory. First Prahlad Maharaj said he's afraid, and now he's saying he's not afraid. So what is it? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, it's just like a mother may be walking by some water with her child. So she's fearful that the child will fall into the water. She herself is not afraid of the water, but she's fearful that the child may fall in. So Prahlad Maharaj, when he said he was afraid of material existence, he was exhibiting his mood of compassion to all the living entities. I'm very fearful that this material existence will bewilder everyone. And also Srila Prabhupada said, and a devotee, even though a devotee is not directly fearful of Maya because they're absorbed in Krishna, they always feel that because I'm not a devotee, that therefore Maya is always dangerous, and they're always alert that Maya can never come in. So he says here, don't be afraid of this poison, because it's poison. You just, if you understand it's poison, it will not be able to act on you because you won't take it. But if you don't understand, if you confuse the poison with nectar, so then he goes on. And he says, lobha karyo navo jatu rosha kamas tu vastu su. No. And don't be, how does this poison become drinkable? How does someone fall into the illusion of drinking this poison? Lobha karyo, when they develop a greed, rosha kamas. And that greed manifests in the form of kama, which later takes the form of anger. Now, who can remember from Bhagavad Gita? What does Krishna say about that? To Arjuna. Arjuna says, why is it, Krishna, that sometimes, you know, even though I know I don't want to do something, it's not good for me, but sometimes I do it anyway. And what does Krishna answer? Yes, kamesha kodesha, rajaguna sumudbhavaha. That this is called lust, which later transforms into anger. And this is the most dangerous enemy of the living entity. So how does this poison become drinkable? We entertain dayato vishayan pumsam. We start to meditate on the material energy, on the material objects. And then they become attractive. If we don't meditate on if there's some material object and we don't see it, then we don't, you know, if we don't know about it, we don't desire it. But immediately, this is the modern psychology. Modern psychology through television, internet, everything, they want to flash as many things as they can in front of you. So that, you know, certainly you'll become attracted to one of them. You know, like I know, I guess some of you go on to Hotmail or something, like, there's always something flashing on the screen. You know, buy this, there's a little chicken eating some worms, and you know, that's your debts, and I don't know what that chicken is, but there's this flashing on there and that flashing on. You know, they figure somehow or another, if I flash enough things on there, I can increase their lust, and then they will buy my product. So this is the whole idea, the materialistic idea. That, and this was even Hiranyakashipu's idea with Prahlad Maharaj. If I just get these, if we just give him enough information, then he'll certainly realize that this material world is very attractive. Actually, but no, Srila Prabhupada mentions, what is this lust? So actually, in his purport, he refers to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his Shikshastika. He said, what are the things, what are the most dangerous things in this world? Valuable gems and beautiful women. Otherwise, Dana and Jhana and Sundari. No? Jhana is more difficult. No? There's Dana, Jhana and Sundari. Now, Dana is very attractive. E Dana Yovana Putra Parijana, as Govindadas says, that because when you're young, especially when you're young, wealth is very attractive. But wealth is always attractive. And in youth, but in youth, also, the especially when you're young, the opposite sex is most attractive. You know, this is very attractive when one is young. So these two things are very dangerous. And jhana, that requires a little more material qualification to have followers. Of course, everybody has some followers. Even if you get married, you have your kids. At least you think they should be followers. Sometimes they're not. But no, or we have, if we have a little business, then you may have a few employees, so you see them as followers. But really, jhana means, jhana is a little more subtle than dana and sundari. Dana and sundari are very gross. I want some money, I want some wealth, I want some property. And sundari, I want the opposite sex. This is very apparent, very gross. And of course now, in this particular phase of Kali Yuga, it's become even more gross. More, you know, young kids at 10, 12 years old, this is being projected into their minds. No. I remember when I was 10 or 12 years old, we thought that the opposite sex had cooties, you know, or some germ or something. We stayed away from them. But that came from a little bit of culture. There's a little bit of culture there. That's gone now. No such thing. Now they're taught at 6, 8, 10 years old, you know, sex education classes. You know, I've seen it. This has happened. I've read one article. At 8 and 10 years old, they're given these classes. And the only thing it does is it wakes up. What is that all about anyway? No. So this is a very dangerous thing. So he refers to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who says not only these things, but kavita. Kavita means anything that is desired. Anything in this world that is desired. No. Kavita literally means that which comes from knowledge of something within this world. That which sprouts up. If you have knowledge of something within this world, fruitive activities, something that creates a desire to enjoy this world. So these things, he said, don't be greedy for these things. Don't be anxious to attain them. But you should desire the nectar. And don't be angry. So why is the Lord saying don't be angry? Because if you desire these things, you will become angry. Kama esha, krodha esha, raja guna, samudbhava. Once you desire something, you must become angry. It's inevitable. This anger, of course, anger doesn't mean just like anger, I'm shouting and yelling. The term anger in that particular verse of Bhagavad Gita also means lamentation, frustration. Because when you attain something, there's only two things that can happen. When you attain something material, either you become greedy for more, if you can get more, and you'll be greedy for more. And once you can't get it, then you become frustrated or angry that I didn't get it. Just like we see people all the time when they don't reach their material goals, they become either frustrated or angry, and they create so much disturbance. So, we have several examples in our parampara of anger and this anger, how it has destroyed, totally so destructive that when one becomes angry. And what is the most famous example of anger in the Bhagavatam? Someone can read. Well, yeah, that's from the Lord's side, but that wasn't anger that destroyed someone. Or that wasn't anger that really, you know. Well, that didn't really destroy because it ended up in devotional service. But the example I can think, the most prominent example is Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj became so angry. Of course, there's also Janamejaya, you know. Janamejaya, Dhruva Maharaja, they become so angry that his brother was killed that he wanted to kill all the yakshas. And Janamejaya became so angry, he wanted to kill all the snakes in the world because of Pariksha Maharaj. Pariksha Maharaj got bitten by a snake, so I'm going to kill all the snakes. And Dhruva Maharaj. And what did it take to stop Dhruva Maharaj's anger? First, Swayambhuva Manu and Lord Brahma. You know, I mean, that really, he was really angry. You know. And he was a devotee. You know. He was a great devotee. But still he became so angry that that shows, and that particular pastime, Srila Prabhupada mentions, this pastime shows that even though one may be a pure devotee, if one is not careful, one can become angry. Actually, there was one time when Srila Prabhupada, in his last, like the last year before he left this world, there was one devotee that came in to serve him, one Mataji came in to do some service. And so Prabhupada kind of, she didn't do things right, and Prabhupada shouted at her. You know? And then Prabhupada said, "Oh, don't mind me, I'm just an old man. Old people are always angry." You know? So he was just showing, of course, Prabhupada was instructing her. But, you know, it's this humility of the pure devotee, thinking that, you know, this is the danger. He was actually showing the danger of anger, that even a pure devotee can become, if one is not very careful, you know, one can become affected. Just like you gave the example, Pariksha Maharaj, he became affected, and that created a difficult circumstance. Of course, he was affected by yoga maya. You know, this was yoga maya. In the case of Dhruva Maharaj, he was although he was a pure devotee, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, there are different phases of pure devotion. You know? So he was attracted to the Lord in pure devotion. But because he was such a powerful kshatriya, his pure devotion had not yet manifested as a high degree of prema bhakti. Because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that even when you're on the threshold of prema, there can be some interference. Although that interference will not make you fall down, there can be some interference that can, you know, make some agitation in your bhakti. And only when you're on the highest platform of prema bhakti, that there's no question of any material circumstance affecting you. And of course, Srila Prabhupada also mentioned in one class that Arjuna, although he was such a topmost pure devotee, that when his son was killed in the battlefield, he became distraught. So one person, and when Srila Prabhupada was preaching somewhere, and of course, especially the Indians would be a little defiant with Srila Prabhupada sometimes. So this one Indian man said, you know, Prabhupada was speaking of the glories of Arjuna. He said, "Well, Arjuna became angry," and he started, you know, shouting. Prabhupada just shut him up. And then he said that actually this is natural. Prabhupada said, when we take a material body, there must be affection. The material body, because affection is the natural condition of the soul. Therefore, when one takes a material body and has friends, family, children, that affection naturally will be manifest, because affection is an integral part of the soul. And therefore that will also manifest on the external plane. So even a pure devotee sometimes has these feelings. Not that I'm a pure devotee, oh, this boy that is, you know, apparently calls himself my son, you know, he's not going to think like that. No. Actually, he has no connection with me, I have no connection with him. We are all just like twigs in a river, and sometimes we will be together. People don't think like that in their family. Although philosophically we can understand, yes, that's the ultimate truth. But the affection must be there. It's also a biological function that causes, you know, that's how children are maintained. If people were so philosophical that they, you know, they just didn't have no attraction to their children, then they would just give them up. You know, say, well, Dhruva Maharaj made it at 5 years old, so let's see what you can do. You know, let's see how pure you are. I'll give you a little instruction and go out to the forest and let's see how you do. So this is not the normal process. As far as an example of giving up dana and sundari. Of course, one of the famous examples in our parampara is Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami, his father and his uncle, of course, they were devotees of the Lord. They were great devotees. But even though great devotees, sometimes great devotees, you know, they have affection for their children. So they could see Raghunath was so attracted to Lord Chaitanya. He simply wanted to go and join Lord Chaitanya. And even though they were devotees, they were thinking, my son, he should take over the family business, you know, he should. There was actually one devotee in our movement. His son, I won't mention his name, but you'll probably figure it out anyway. You know, that he's, he studied law, and then his son grew up and he also studied law. And so when his son graduated, he said, so what do you, you know, I'm very happy you graduated now, so I, you know, would you like to take a vacation somewhere? And he said, actually, I'd like to maybe spend the summer living in a temple. Oh yeah, that's very nice. So he went and lived in the temple, and then summer was over, so his father called him and said, so what do you want to do? Would you like to go into practice with me, or can I, you know, want to go and practice with some law firm? He said, actually, after spending the summer in the temple, I think I want to be a brahmachari. He went, what? No, brahmachari, no. What? You know, that, what will you do? How will you maintain yourself? You know. And he said, my dear father, when you were the temple president, would you have said that to a brahmachari? No? And he go, well, I guess not. So he had to accept. His son wanted to be a brahmachari. So also, even these great devotees, they wanted Raghunath. They had a plan for Raghunath. Of course, that pastime is also to teach us that if someone is attracted to the Lord, even though we may have a plan for them, better to let that attraction, you know, become manifest and mature. But that is the greatest service we can do to our children, is let their devotion. Sometimes actually parents who come to me, people who join, they say, I don't know what to do. My son or my daughter just wants to be in your temple. And they just want to, I just tell, let them go. Because if you try to force them to do something else, then they'll simply become rebellious. I said, let's work together. Let them stay for a year or two and you know, get this out of their system. And then afterwards they can go back and study and, you know, do whatever they need to do to prepare for their lives. Because my experience is that most people do that anyway. You know? So it's pretty assured. And if somebody turns out to be a real brahmachari or brahmacharini, then we'll deal with the parents later. Just like Vasudeva, you know. He said, Kamsa's going to cut off my wife's head, so let me just take care of that situation. We'll deal with the rest later. So sometimes we have to use that logic. And so generally it works out. People will accept, yeah, it makes sense. You know, let them get it out of their system, go through this phase. And I said, in any way, they're going to learn spiritual values, which will always be so useful in their life, more useful than anything else, and everything they do will be done with honesty and integrity and morality. So unless they're not very nice people, they generally accept that. So they did everything. They actually put a guard. They had a Brahmin guard. You know, their priest was always supposed to guard Raghunath, that he would never be left alone because he might run off with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then they got him the most beautiful, they looked around all over Bengal and got him the most beautiful wife that existed. You know, the most beautiful of all. You know, most beautiful, most qualified, most talented. And so Raghunath got married, but he was always thinking of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and his wife was becoming frustrated. And she would try to serve him and everything. He'd say, yeah, okay, yeah, thank you. And he was just thinking of Mahaprabhu. And his father and uncle couldn't understand it. And finally he left. So they thought, well, he's gone with Mahaprabhu, but we're going to send him so much money every month. And so he received the money. First, you know, he thought, well, I don't want to agitate them because they might try to get me back. So I'll accept the money, and then he would just make a festival for Mahaprabhu and Nityananda and all the devotees. Then he did that for a long time. And then Mahaprabhu asked Swarup Damodar, because he had put Raghunath under the care of Swarup Damodar. What happened to the festivals? Is Raghunath not keeping his money now? He's not doing any more festivals? He said, actually, he gave it up. He decided that this money is motivated, has some motivation to it. And as Rupa Goswami says, Anya bilashita shunyam jnana kamanya napitam, that we don't want anything that has any tinge of material motivation. So Mahaprabhu was very pleased. What is he doing? Oh, he's standing at the Simhadwar, at the entrance of the Jagannath temple, and just doing madhukari, just begging for his minimal existence. And then Mahaprabhu would see him, and he didn't see him anymore. He said, what is Raghunath doing? I said, well, actually, now he simply goes to the back of the temple. Like any of you who have been to South India, you can see the South Indian temples there. They have the altar, and then they have this little drain that runs out to the outside, and they have this little yali spigot, you know, which is, it looks like a little dragon or something with the mouth, and then all the charanamrita comes out there, and all the remnants from the, you know, the offering and everything, and so there's pieces of rice, and it all comes out. So Raghunath would go there, and after the cows had eaten, he would gather up whatever was left, and he would wash it off. So Mahaprabhu came and he said, Raghunath, what is that feast you have? Why are you keeping it away from me? Why are you being so greedy? Raghunath goes like this. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu grabbed his hand. No, no, no. And he took it. And Srila Prabhupada explains that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is fed from the austerities of his devotees. That is his favorite foodstuff, the austerity of his devotees. Of course, that doesn't mean artificial austerities. That means chanting Hare Krishna, following the principles. This is how Mahaprabhu will be very happy with us. So Raghunath Das showed that no attraction to wealth, no attraction to wealth. Of course, Prabhupada also said we shouldn't follow the example of Raghunath Das Goswami. We can't imitate him. We can just try to follow to the degree that is possible. And as far as if we don't do this, if we become attached, just like we can see Chitraketu or King Nabi. You know? King Nabi wanted a son. And even his ministers were saying, why do you want a son? Why don't you ask for liberation? You know? But he was being inspired to have a son so that son could become the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know? Even Yadu, that King Yadu, he refused to take the kingdom of his father, Yayati. He refused to take his old age because he said, in the future, I have understood astrologically, they could understand, that Krishna will appear in my dynasty. Therefore, if I take his old age and I don't, have any children, then how will Krishna appear? So apparently they were attached, but that attachment was for, the apparent attachment was for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then there's the kings like Priyavrata. Priyavrata was totally detached, and he was forced to become attached. He was being instructed by Narad Muni. Who can have better instruction? And he was a brahmachari, and he was doing meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Swayambhuva Manu, who was at retirement age, said, you know, what am I going to do? He's the only one that can take over the kingdom. But Priyavrata wouldn't listen. He said, how can I compete with Narad Muni? So what do we do in that case? Then we call in Lord Brahma, who is Narada Muni's authority. This sometimes happens in ISKCON also. So, because somebody wants to be a brahmacharya, do this service, so you have to call in the GBC. Like the guru tells somebody, you should do this, but then there's some other service that needs to be done. So sometimes the GBC even has to supersede the order of the guru. So in this case, sometimes people complain about that. This is my guru, my absolute authority. But actually we see that example in the Bhagavatam. Here was the guru, Narada Muni, giving instruction, you should be a brahmachari. But when his authority came in, Lord Brahma, he said, no, I want him to get married. He has to manage the universe. So of course, it's more attractive to just meditate than to manage the universe for most people. And if you're already situated in that meditative mood. But because the superior authority wanted that, then he accepted. But he never forgot his devotional service. But naturally, when you go into married life, as I'm sure many of you were brahmacharis and then became grihasthas, so one knows that there's a certain amount of attachment that develops. But as soon as again Narada Muni reminded Priyavrata of his pure devotion, he gave up his wife just like that. No more sundari. And he was still young. He was still able to enjoy. But as soon as he had completed his duty and there was someone else to take over the universe, he left. Wife and everything. For the higher cause. And even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who spoke the Shikshastika, he showed. He gave up his sundari. And who was his sundari? Lakshmi Devi. Vishnu Priya. And he gave her up. And Srila Prabhupada said, someone may criticize Mahaprabhu for going against Vedic Dharma, that one should take care of a young wife. But he gave her up for a higher cause. So here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is teaching us that we should be willing to give up even the greatest wealth, not be attracted to these things, but keep our focus on the nectar. And what is that nectar? That nectar is chanting the holy name of the Lord, serving Krishna. And that's why Rupa Goswami says, Anya Bilashita Shunya. And the Acharyas, when they explain that, Anya Bilashita Shunya, what it means is that anything except for one desire, which Rupa Goswami says later, what is that desire? Krishna Anushilana. Anushilana means to serve Krishna continuously with no interruption. So that desire, it cannot be eliminated, because if everything else is eliminated, that desire must be there. Because even Jiva Goswami explains that even the impersonalist, they eliminate all desires, but they still have a desire to be peaceful and to be happy. So they have not eliminated all desires. And if they can eliminate that desire, then the original desire will come out, which is to please Krishna, to serve Krishna, to make Krishna happy. So this is the whole point here, that the Supreme Lord is instructing the demigods and instructing us that when we give up anger, when we give up material desire, when we give up the greediness in this material world, then our spiritual, original spiritual desire, that nectar, that is the real nectar in our life, that will become prominent. And that will give us, as Srila Prabhupada said here, the real purpose was to get the nectar. So we always have to remember that in our spiritual life. Because there will be so many impediments, there will be the ocean of poison, or the ocean of material existence. That ocean of poison is present in our lives. And there'll be so many other temptations. At every step, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that even when one becomes a very elevated devotee situated in Bhava Bhakti, that there is a very dangerous thing, which is the third thing that Lord Chaitanya mentions Of course, he mentions it in the middle. Maybe in the middle because it's subtle and more difficult to attain. But jhana, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that once one becomes a great preacher of the Bhagavatam, and then so many people will come and follow, and they will say, he is a topmost pure devotee, he is Uttamadhikari. And then if one starts thinking, everybody says that, must be true. No. Then he will become victim to jhana, and he will fall away from devotional service. So these things continue up to the point of prema bhakti. No. These things are dangerous. Therefore, the example of Jad Bharat or Bharat Maharaj, even at the platform of Bhava Bhakti or Bhava Mangala Thakur, these are our two examples. That they were both situated in Bhava Bhakti and they became attracted to some aspect of this material world again. And they were, of course, because they were situated in Bhava Bhakti, almost on the platform of prema, then they immediately came to their senses. Immediately meaning, you know, immediate for us means in the next 5 minutes, but immediately means in the next life. You know? In the case of Bhava Mangala Thakur, later on in his life, in the case of Bharat Maharaj, he became Jad Bharat. He became fully realized as a deer, and became a deer, and then he became Jad Bharat, and fully realized, situated in Krishna praying. So, but we shouldn't take that. The examples are there, we shouldn't take that. If we happen to be situated in Bhava Bhakti, maybe some of you are, so if you happen to be there, don't become slack. Even when one is situated in prema bhakti, then naturally one will think that I have no qualification. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur chants, what is our qualification? That song. Yes. Guru Dev, Kripa Bindu Dev. What is that? The last line. Kichu Nahi Pai Tomara Karuna Sara. What is the line before that? Yes. Kichu Nahi Pai Tomara Karuna Sara. That I have no qualification. But my only qualification is your mercy. This is how a pure devotee thinks. My only qualification. Sometimes we say that, but we don't think that. In our inner heart, we may say, oh yes, the mercy of Guru Maharaj, but then at another point we're thinking, no, I'm so intelligent, I'm this, I'm that, I'm a good devotee, I'm better than this one, I'm better than that one. This one's still got an edge on me, but I'll work on it. I can manifest a little envy and get past them. No? So as long as we have that envy in our hearts, we may say that, but it's good to say it. You know, we sing every day in Guru Puja that the only thing we want to do is Janame Janame Prabhu Se. We just want to serve the spiritual master birth after birth. And the more we sing these things, but when we sing it, we should meditate on it. What does that mean? What are we singing here? I'm not just going through some ceremony. We were discussing this yesterday also, right? That we don't want to just do these ceremonies. Just like you offer obeisances. So Rupa Goswami says, what does it mean when you offer obeisances? You should touch the floor with 5 points. I mean the 2 knees, the 2 arms, and the head. And this is surrendering the 5 aspects of knowledge to the Supreme Lord. So everything has meaning. Everything has deep meaning. Everything we're doing, even though it may seem just like some ritual, no, but everything that the Vaishnavacharyas have given us has a deep meaning. And we should be very anxious to understand, you know. And every time we chant Mangalarti, of course some people don't worry about the meditation, because if you don't go to Mangalarti, you don't have to worry about meditating on it. But when we do it, we shouldn't just do it ritualistically. We should do it as meditation. Meditate on this Guru Vastikam. Meditate on Guru Vandana. meditate on, just like we just sang. You know? Speaking of beauty, we just sang Yashomati Nandana, you know, this Nam Kirtan. And we're speaking of beauty, and Krishna in there is known as Subhasa, you know, such a beautiful dresser. You know? So we can, all these songs bring out all the qualities of Krishna, all the qualities of the devotee, all the proper attitudes of a devotee. And if we meditate on each one of these songs very deeply, then devotion will sprout up in the heart. That's why we have these bhajans and kirtans. Actually, one devotee, just to conclude, one devotee came to Srila Prabhupada with his guitar, and he said, Srila Prabhupada, I made this song about Krishna, so can I play it for you? And Prabhupada said, yeah, a little reluctantly, but he wanted to encourage the devotees, so he said yes. So he sang his song about Krishna. He says, so Prabhupada looking, waiting for Prabhupada to say, wow, that was wonderful. You know, you're a real kavi, you're a real poet. And Prabhupada said, yes, it was nice. Nice sentiment. Prabhupada said, but actually, you should hear the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur. Then you will understand how to worship Krishna with devotion. With proper devotion. And so he just went, It was deflated a little bit. So, we may have so many good ideas and we may think our intelligence is so sharp, but when we put it in the spotlight of the pure devotees, then we can actually take our position as an insignificant servant. But if we listen to our intelligence or our mind, then we'll become very great in our own estimation. If we listen to the acharyas, then we'll take the proper position. Be servant of the servant of the servant. So I'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
I was thinking that you were saying about prasadam, people don't come to get prasadam.
Well, some do, but most don't.
Yeah, they come and enjoy. So the demons, they were so attracted to Mohini Murti, of course they wanted to enjoy, but Lord itself, and so when one wants to really enjoy, it doesn't. My point is, it was Krishna, but they wanted to enjoy Krishna, so they didn't get any benefit.
Yeah. But because people want to enjoy, then we should facilitate that. Let them enjoy within Krishna consciousness. They want to enjoy. No. So let them enjoy within the realm of Krishna consciousness. Because everyone comes to Krishna, chaturvidha bhajate mam, with a motive to enjoy, to be happier, to increase my material happiness, to stop the suffering so I can be happy, to get some material object so I can be happy, to satisfy my intellectual curiosity so I can be happy and by being the most knowledgeable, or to find the absolute truth so I can be happy and peaceful. Everybody comes with some motive to enjoy Krishna. And then, so we should facilitate that. Srila Prabhupada facilitated that. As I told yesterday, I mentioned the point that Prabhupada said, I didn't force anything on them. I simply gave them prasadam. I told them, come and eat, take prasadam, enjoy. We can see Prabhupada, not only he gave them prasadam, he cooked it, and he served it out to the first people that came. He just served it out to them. So we want them to enjoy. And then they can learn to serve. They can develop the service attitude.
And also by the act of appreciation, one can advance.
Yeah.
Not knowingly.
Yeah, that's agyata sukriti.
They appreciate.
Yeah. Yes, Prabhupada was very happy to see people come and enjoy Krishna consciousness. And it will always be like that. There will always be a few devotees who are very serious, and there will be hundreds of people who are coming to enjoy, and devotees are serving them. Otherwise, If we want everybody else to serve, we have to be careful that we don't fall into the mentality, let them, you know, come because I'm not happy doing so much service. This is like too much for me. So I want to turn them all into serious devotees so I can do less service. Jayananda, he was always, that was always his mood. Just let everybody be happy serving Krishna, worshiping Lord Jagannath. We're not interested, we're simply trying to perform some service. However long it takes them to come to the point of serving Krishna, that's Krishna's business. Our business is to facilitate them. Whatever platform they're on, whether it's a jnata sukriti or they're understanding something, just like we see most neophyte devotees, this is the characteristic of a neophyte devotee, is they want to enjoy Krishna. They're devotees. But they want to enjoy Krishna, they want to enjoy devotional service. Only an uttamadhikari only wants to see Krishna happy. And they're willing to do any sacrifice, anything, just to see that Krishna is happy. So that the first phase of becoming uttamadhikari means that we surrender to this. The first phase meaning the first touch, the first taste, is that we so much appreciate what the Vaishnavas and the spiritual master have done for us that we want to sacrifice our lives to please them. That's when we start getting a taste of that pleasure. But that pleasure is there all throughout society. The pleasure of seeing one's children happy, just like a mother seeing their children happy, they're doing sacrifice. They're cooking and cleaning and, doing it, but they feel just so much pleasure to see their child smile. Child may be urinating in their face or whatever, but they feel happy just to see the child properly taken care of. So this is the nature of service. And so if any mother can do it, then why can't we do it? Because we have some pride, we have some desire to ourselves, we have a desire to enjoy devotional service. And therefore we become disturbed when people don't advance quickly enough. Of course, Srila Prabhupada did. There's one, if you examine Srila Prabhupada's writings, when he was a little bit older, when he was like the last few months before he left, he really started writing some heavy purports. He always wrote some heavy purports, but every one of them was like really give up this material. Every one of his classes was give up material enjoyment. Because he knew he was leaving very soon, so he had to hammer in the message of pure devotion before he left. But other than that, Srila Prabhupada was just, he would facilitate it. People would come and eat or come and dance. And, Prabhupada could see that. He was sitting there, you see those going, dancing like that. And, it's not ecstasy. It's not real ecstasy, but they're feeling, from their platform, it's ecstasy. This chanting of the holy name. Relatively speaking, from where they're at, they were feeling ecstasy. And Prabhupada was happy just to see people responding to the holy name. So we have to follow his example and just be happy to give them any opportunity to be in contact with Krishna. Even Prabhupada took it to the point, he said, even if they criticize us, if they say Krishna, then we're happy. Even though some people would write an article criticizing the devotees, probably say, very nice, they've said Krishna. So they made some advancement. And anyone who reads that article, even though, of course, Prabhupada wanted the articles to be favorable, but even though someone may read an unfavorable article, they hear the name Krishna. And that will have some, that seed will go into the heart and it will fructify whenever they get the proper association. And there's so many seeds being planted because there's so many books going out. Therefore, our duty is to act in such a way that we will start watering that seed by our actions, by our words, by our interaction with people, our attitude will bring out, that seed will start growing. Somebody planted that seed in their heart, giving them a book, going out in Harinam. And so we have to help that seed start to grow.
Initially, when we come and like in association of devotees, we are so grateful and like respectful towards devotees, like especially my kid. And then, in due course of time, like seeing the devotee over and again, like that familiarity comes. In, or I don't know what reason, and that gratefulness like is reduced or goes away. So, like, how should one take care so that he always remains grateful for the association?
One thing is to be humble. If we actually have real humility and tolerance, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, respecting others, always looking for the good qualities of others. Generally speaking, the diminishing perception, the perception that diminishes of the greatness of devotees, is usually caused by offenses. In the beginning, we haven't committed any offenses, just like Jai and Vijay. They did everything wrong. They did so many sinful activities, but they didn't commit any offenses. So someone who comes to devotional service, they may have done, you know, unlimited sinful activities, but they haven't offended the Vaishnavas. So when they see the Vaishnavas, they think they're glorious. But then after some time, it's just like children. You know, when children see that, when they're little children, they see their father and their mother as the supreme protector, the most wonderful person. And then when they get a little older, they see, wait a minute, you know, what are they, you know, see them take a little drink or, you know, smoke a cigarette or something. Hey, this is not the demigod I perceived in the beginning. You know, they start diminishing. So a devotee has to be very careful that we don't, so to speak, grow up, you know, and all of a sudden now I'm an advanced devotee. Just like we see new devotees, they come and they offer obeisances to everybody. And then, you know, when they get a little older, it's like, well, maybe I'll offer obeisance to some, you know, somebody here and there, but, you know, not everybody anymore. And we see Raghunath Das Goswami, he offered obeisance to 2,000 Vaishnavas daily. You know, or 2,000 obeisances to Vaishnavas, minimum. So better to follow the example of Raghunath Das Goswami than so-and-so Das, who's, you know, thinks that they're I always remember one thing that stuck in my mind. I saw one devotee who was, you know, one of a very senior devotee, but he became very successful in business. And so I think he became a little puffed up. And I saw him come into the L.A. temple once. There was all kinds of senior devotees around, just walked up, got out of his Mercedes, walked up, came up to the deity, offered obeisances, walked out, you know. So this is like the perfect neophyte. No, kanishtadikar. Not respecting the Vaishnava, just feeling some respect for the deity, but no respect for the Vaishnava. So this is all due to offenses. If we avoid offenses very carefully, then we will always respect all of the Vaishnava. So that's what we have to do, avoid offenses against the holy name, the deities, the devotees, and then we will always be able to maintain the proper attitude. And follow, and as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said, wear the necklace of the Shikshastika, especially the third verse, Trinadapi Sunichena. Wear that as a garland, always around your neck. So I think because of the time, we'll have to stop now. And so I'm going to be leaving. I wanted to thank you all very much for your kind attention and association, and hopefully I'll be able to come back soon and get your association again. Srila Prabhupada ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki, Shri Shri Radha Kalachandji ki, Shri Jagannath Balarasi Bhattadevi ki, Shri Sigourney Thai ki, Nithai Gaur Pramanandi.